Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID.
You're now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
X about me.
You have to be closing all the time.
Always be closing.
I love what I do. When you love what you do, you want to be the best at it.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Learn from thought leaders in sales operations. Actionable strategies from Sales Ops Ninjas. And now, your hosts, Tom Hunt and Henry Peacock. Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. We're joined by Jason Meuring, who is currently a sales operations manager at Cisco Capital. Now, I'm seeing that Jason has over 7 years experience kind of in the business and sales ops game, specifically at Cisco Capital. So it's going to be interesting to learn about how sales or business ops has evolved during that time. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
So, Jason, first question, how did you originally move into the sales ops world? I know you had a different role before at Cisco Capital.
Yeah, so for several years, I worked with Cisco and Cisco Capital in a consulting type role, building mostly systems core to various organizations at Cisco. And then eventually I accepted a role working on a leasing and lending type system that was being built at Cisco Capital as an analyst. And during my work with Cisco Capital, I started to learn the business. We're in the technology financing business. We provide leases and loans to primarily Cisco's partners, customers. And during my role as an analyst, I began to do what is now considered some of the classic, you know, sales operations type functions for, at the time, the sales operations organization. We were working with building some reports and measuring forecasts. We were looking at building and enhancing some of the systems that our salespeople at Cisco Capital were using. And then there was an opportunity to join the organization, formally, the sales ops organization at Cisco Capital. And it looked very exciting. It wasn't so different than what I was doing, but it definitely gave me more breadth and depth of the what we now understand to be sales ops functions.
Got it. And what is the current sales tech stack that you're operating?
A good question. So I think as a lot of sales or ops organizations would say, Salesforce is definitely center to us. So we have our own instance of Salesforce.com. It's separate than Cisco's. Our sales team is much smaller than Cisco's. And so we've really centered most of what we do around Salesforce. We've tried to adopt more than just the sales cloud offering in Salesforce. We are currently using Einstein Analytics for some of our analytics tools. And then the primary applications that our salespeople use to do their work, which is pricing and credit type functions. Our IT team has very cleverly built those applications so that from the salesperson's perspective, they're fully integrated in Salesforce. They never leave the context of Salesforce. And in fact, the same exists with our customer master, our customer database for our customers at Cisco Capital. It's all plugged into Salesforce. And so one of our guiding principles, in fact, is that we want Salesforce to be the single source, the single tool that our sales managers use, as well as our sales individual sellers. So we also use Tableau, which is an analytical suite that many of you know. Our finance organization currently is responsible for most of the functions of the forecast. even though it's published. It's published in Tableau. The underlying pipeline data is extracted from Salesforce. We're looking at building out some more business intelligence inside Tableau. So that's definitely another tool that we're using. Cisco then provides a whole set of tools that we use. And Cisco has created some of these tools. So I know we're talking to each other on Zoom right now, but the product that Cisco owns is WebEx. So that's certainly used by our salespeople. We have an instant messenger client called Jabber that we use. It's also a Cisco tool. A new tool that's been developed called WebEx Teams. It'll eventually replace Jabber. It's a sort of an instant messenger client, but also a way where you can set up groups where you're broadcasting out a message to a larger audience, but still in the instant message type experience. Let's see. Obviously, the Office applications, right? Those are always included.
Yeah.
And we're migrating to SharePoint. So we'll be using Microsoft SharePoint as part of our tech stack. Let me think here. In our particular business, sorry, go ahead.
No, carry on, sorry.
Okay. So there are some obscure type companies that are involved in some of the calculations due to our specific business in calculating lease pricing, but I'm not sure those are so relevant here. Yes, but and then there's one other reporting tool I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
And I lost the train of thought there. So yeah, those are the basic tools we use.
Got it. And just for the audience's benefit, what is the scale of the Cisco Capital sales team and how many people in the sales ops team that are supporting those?
Yeah, so our sales team is 200 people approximately, and our sales ops group is five people. So we're relatively small compared to the hundreds of sales ops type roles on the Cisco side, our parent company.
Yeah, I mean, so from collecting data from interviewees, I normally see the ratio between ops to sales rep is 1 to 15, but you guys are currently rocking 1 to 40, it seems like.
Yeah.
So let's talk a bit about that. How's the sales team organized and how do you support them? Do you have like one ops person per 40 reps or like what's the structure?
Yeah, so we're the global sales ops team, and we don't have an allocation of each of us to any particular group of people. There are a few individuals around the world that support more of the local geos. They're not technically part of our sales ops organization, but they do serve some sales ops types roles and providing sales related reporting and those kinds of tasks. So we're set up where. Let's see. So we support the whole world. We divide out our geographies into the basic Americas, EMEA, and APJC. In the US, there's further segmentation. That's by like enterprise, commercial, service provider, public sector. So you do break it down further in the United States. Our interactions are, each of us has a different type role. So we'll have one of our individuals on our team is more technically oriented. We title him as our Salesforce administrator. For some functions, he'll work with our IT group that supports several pieces of our work. But he's more technically oriented. He learned the Einstein analytics suite from Salesforce. Yeah. Pretty much on his own. Another member of my team is a CPA. Her background is more finance. She worked with Cisco Finance for a long time. She has that role. So things that are related to some of the reporting or type accounting type challenges we'll have downstream, she would be assigned to that. Another member has more marketing type experience. So for things related to communications and the collateral that we provide to our sales teams, the more sales enablement type function she'll work on. So each of us comes with a different skill set, and we divide and conquer or contribute to the projects that involve all of us.
Got it. And which would you say your strength is? Which area within sales operations?
Me personally or my organization? Me personally. Okay. I would say that my strength is definitely on the systems and process side. That's my background. I look at making life more efficient, increasing sales productivity. I look at survey results from our sellers and then taking those results and trying to derive priorities, prioritize projects that will improve their productivity, give them more time with their customers and partners that they work with. And then turning also some of that feedback into specific enhancements into the different systems and tools that our sellers use.
Got it. And that leads very nicely onto my next question, which was going to be about something you guys have done recently to improve the productivity of a single or a number of reps.
Yeah, let's see here. Trying to think of a really good example. Well, we have a pretty sophisticated system that's related to their basic function, which is pricing leases and loans. Our salespeople, the primary system they're in on a daily basis, other than Salesforce, is this tool that we call the pricing workbench. And sometimes there are defects that are noticed, some issues there. And what we've seen is that without careful analysis, some of these defects will come up time and time again. So one of the things we've done recently is we've taken a really thorough look at the kinds of defects that are being logged with our IT support teams and holding our IT teams accountable for making sure they prioritize the most impactful fixes rather than the ones that maybe they feel are more necessary to support something that's separate. We can use the data that we've compiled to make sure that they're working on the ones that will ultimately free up the time and help productivity for our sellers.
Got it. This is super interesting, right? So we have like the sales reps here. We have the IT team here. We need the IT team to help the sales reps. But obviously, the sales reps are too busy selling. So they need you guys, like the middleman, to almost represent the sales team to prioritize what is pushed through the IT team's workflow. Is that right?
That's right. I probably could have mentioned that before. I mean, we do represent the voice of sales. You know, we will compile the feedback from sales and then be an advocate for sales to the adjacent organizations, primarily IT. We have an operations type organization and then also finance. So we're the advocates where we liaise with those organizations. We provide an important glue sometimes that holds those or brings those organizations together when things need to be discussed and resolved.
Got it. Yeah, I think we just have our quote. We pull out one quote per episode, and I think that's the quote we're going to use. We represent the voice of the sales team. Awesome. So you mentioned forecasting earlier. Did you say that sits within finance?
Now tuned into the greatest.
This is Sales Ops Demystified.
Hello, sales ops people. Tom here. I'm recording this because we literally just launched what we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of sales ops insights. We've created the sales ops handbook that you can get at ebster.com/sales-ops-handbook. And what we essentially did is from our first 30 interviews, we collated all of the best insights from people such as Jeff at Intercom, from people at DocuSign, Lucid, Oracle, and CrowdCube. And we've crammed them into an approximately 45-page ebook, which, as I said, we believe to be the most comprehensive collection of sales ops wisdom in the world. So you can go to ebster.com/sales-ops-handbook, and you can get that for simply entering your email address.
Yeah, I think it's a legacy, you know, decision that was made some time ago. But our finance teams, which are sort of a separate organization, they run the forecast calls on Mondays with the sales teams, and they consequently they compile the final forecast presentation that's presented to the sales managers and sellers on those calls. So we help the finance teams. We make sure that they can get the right information. We work with them when they want to make improvements to the forecast presentation. We definitely play a role there, but they're the primary. They're the ones who present it. They're accountable for the forecasting at Cisco Capital.
Got it. That's quite interesting. I think this is one of the first times where the forecasting does not sit directly within the sales ops team and sits within finance. Mm-hmm. Cool. And then next question, and this might be more for your technical guy, but the data quality within Salesforce, does that sit with your team? And what are you currently doing to improve that?
Well, I mean, data quality is so important to every organization, every instance of an org for Salesforce. We do a variety of things. So first, we can do stuff on our own on a quarterly basis. We look at, we run a series of data quality type reports. We look at, for example, null fields. If we find out that we're asking for some piece of information and it's not required and it's very seldomly completed and we don't have a strong business justification for it, then we'll take it out. Also, if it's a required field, if it's something where a required entry by our sellers, and we determine that most of the time it's just bogus or it was just a quick, first selection on the list selection, then we'll revisit and say, hey, what are we really doing with this information? Is this the right thing to ask at this point in the process? Is it just something obscure that maybe one group wanted to measure at some point, but has kind of lost track of? We'll make sure we take it out. So we do that on a quarterly basis. We'll run these data quality checks. But we also, from our surveys, from our individual, small group of sellers that we interview, we'll come across their own data quality challenges. For example, they'll find that they say that they have a subset of a certain kinds of deals that use a certain business model, for example. And they'll say, I know we have 10 or 15 of these, but when we run the reports, we only see 3. What's going on? And so we'll go and figure out, why there's a discrepancy there. So we'll help in these individual cases. Sometimes, unfortunately, we uncover, perhaps a moderate to major defect in how data is being transferred from one system to another, and that results in some reporting issues. And since we're involved in many of the different systems that our company uses, we identify those and we'll work with the right teams to get those resolved.
Got it.
Also, from a data quality, I like to also say that the collateral, the sales enablement types materials that we provide to our sellers, I also consider that part of the quality, because in those materials, it'll state some attributes of an offering, for example, from our company. And sometimes, those details change soon after they're published. And so what we do is we make sure we go through all of the materials that our salespeople utilize, kind of like almost a marketing function, and make sure that information is correct and updated. And when it's not, we send it back to the, say, correct marketing teams or the product development teams to make sure that's corrected and republished or handed back to us for republishing, so our salespeople always have accurate and quality information.
Got it. And that's the first time I've heard that out of 80 interviews, I think, that data quality also includes the collateral that you're giving. Penultimate question. Jason, if you had to record just one sales-related metric for the rest of your career, which would you choose?
I have been fascinated with the pipeline coverage metric. That is one that I first saw nicely published in one of the templates that Salesforce developed as part of their Einstein solution. And what it is that the way to calculate that is you start with your quota, and then you reduce that quota by the amount of closed business. So you have your remaining quota. And then you select the different forecast categories that you wanted to consider as part of your pipeline. And you measure then the ratio of how much pipeline you have to close your remaining quota. To me, it's a very powerful metric, because in the beginning of a fiscal period, you may want to include very broad, you know, pipelines. So in Salesforce, it would be, you know, the pipeline forecast category plus commit in best case. But as the quarter, as you move into the fiscal period, say the quarter, you start getting more specific. And maybe towards the end, I only want to see what my committed opportunities, the aggregate of my committed opportunities are to my remaining quota. And that gives the sales managers a pretty good idea about how likely they are based on their pipeline to hit their quotas.
Interesting. Okay, so this is looking at, well, it's basically giving you a snapshot as to how likely you are to close based on how much you have at different stages through the pipeline. But let's say you're measuring this 6 months out from the end of the financial year, you're going to open up more stages in the pipeline in order to do this calculation because you know you have more time. And then
that's
if you're
right.
measuring
that's
it
right.
1 month out, okay, got it.
You want to narrow the focus on just those committed opportunities. And then what we haven't done yet, but what I plan to do is we can look at the history when your pipeline metric is like this, a certain value. You can predict then, you know, will I reach my quota? Should I focus my time and effort on building the pipeline really quickly if it's early enough? Is that where I should tell my salespeople to go focus? Or should they really focus on those opportunities that are, you know, and say in the best case upside and try to get those to commit or enclosed? So it gives the managers a key insight into how they want to direct their sales teams.
Got it. Awesome. And then a final question, who in the world of sales operations has inspired or educated you the most?
Who in the world? So do you mean other companies or other leaders that I've heard speak?
Yeah, so normally individuals within sales operations.
Well, I've been inspired by some of the individuals in our parent company, Cisco, that are in the sales ops roles. For them, they have so many more team members that they're able to have some individuals dedicated to more the philosophy of the organization, to the deep, you know, the deep thinking, planning strategy, that they're just, you know, there's a lot more people that are removed from the tactical work so they can do that thinking work. And they've come up with some great ideas. They're able to move fast. I've really enjoyed some of the sessions that I've seen in the sales ops domain from Dreamforce, which my entire team attends every year and has for the last six years or so. And I mean, some of those sessions by ranging from the academic, like Forrester and IDC type presenters, all the way to the Salesforce employees showcasing, hey, if you have a sales ops organization, here's something that's particularly interesting to you. So I know that might be a little bit broad there, but not specific to any individuals, but definitely some Salesforce and our parent company has given us some inspiration.
Oh, awesome. That is absolutely fine. Okay, Jason, I'm going to pick out a few things I particularly enjoyed. I have two pages of notes here. Your view of keeping Salesforce as the absolute single source of truth and plugging in as much as you can into Salesforce, I think is good because obviously it gives you like the Bible of where you are with all of your customer data, but also it's probably making your salespeople more productive because they don't have to flip over here to do one thing and then come back to do another.
Right.
Your quote, well, your philosophy almost about how your team is representing the sales team and you're the voice. And then finally, this the point that I never heard about with data quality also applying to the data or the information that you're giving your reps as they go out selling and all the capital that you're giving. So Jason, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.